All right. It has been a while since I have recorded a Writing Better episode, and I'm so excited to be doing it again. I'm your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Becky Blanton. She's a ghostwriter. She likes to say that she helps, she's a business memoirist who helps tell stories that others won't tell. She believes that our most powerful stories are often when we tell our secrets. She's worked on over a dozen Amazon bestsellers, including Journey to Midnight, a book about an undercover cop's journey from suicide to salvation. She interviewed police officers from active shooter situations. And she's also worked on a book called Do No Harm by Ramon Batista, a Santa Monica police chief who took their county from 14 active police shootings a year to two by employing a system of hiring for character rather than military background or expertise. Becky, welcome to the podcast.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. So when we were talking before I hit record, you shared something with me, a commonly held belief about writing that you passionately disagree with, which is the idea that writing a book is the end game or the goal. You say that a book, no matter how well written or received, is a tool. It is not the goal. And you have to explain this to clients a lot of times, that writing a book is just one step on the journey to whatever it is they want to achieve. It's a point on the path to selling. So my first question for you is, what exactly do you mean by that?
People think, I'm going to write a book. It's going to be a bestseller. I'm going to make a lot of money and everything will be great. But that's not how it works. A book is it's a tool. It's like an introduction. It's a glorified business card. It tells people about who you are, what you do, and how you do it. But if you don't have a platform set up, if you don't have a point of view about other things, it really doesn't do anything. It's kind of like giving somebody a car without a map, you know?
Yeah. How often are people coming to you with this idea that like the book is the end all be all?
Probably 90%.
Wow.
They just don't get it.
And does this include customers that are coming to you to get their books ghostwritten?
Yeah. And the people that do understand it, I've either worked with them before or they've published another book.
And how do you explain to somebody that that's not how it is? And like, how well does that get received when you try to do that?
Well, if I said, Timmy, go to Lowe's and buy me a tool, what are you going to say? What kind of tool? What for? What are you doing with it? You need to know what the tool's used for before you can buy it. And a book's the same way. What do you hope to accomplish with your book? Do you want to get more clients? Do you want to be established as an expert in your field? Do you want to be hired as a consultant to do some business decision? So once people understand that books, kind of like money has a job, you know, and your budget tells money what it's going to do. I make $100, you know, $10 here and $5 there. Everything has a job. And the book's the same way. It's got to do something. It's got to have a purpose.
Now, you say that you're a business memoirist. So I'm guessing like the majority of the books or maybe all of the books that you work on are business memoirs. Is that right?
I'd say it's about half and half. I do a lot of business how-to thought leadership books. Uh-huh. And those guys get it. When I say, you know, your book needs a job, they're like, oh, you know, okay.
And then what's the other half?
Well, the business memoirs and then thought leader books, you know, which is like how to do a business, how to be a leader, how to whatever. I do a few fiction books, but mostly for friends. Because those are hard. Fiction's a lot harder than nonfiction.
Yeah, I do a lot of fiction, but it's fiction for kids. So it's a totally different category. Like it's, you know, 32 page picture books, which can be their own set of like challenging thing. Because a lot of people say it takes twice as much time to write half as many words. And I believe that.
Yeah. What you do is, you know, I don't think I could do it because I've tried it and it is hard. So my hat's off to you that you do it. For a business, that's amazing.
I think that writing business memoirs is probably very difficult as well. What's something that you think most people don't understand about the actual how-to of writing a business memoir?
Well, it's true for writing a business memoir, but it's actually true for writing across the board. And that is, people like to be safe. They don't want to be laughed at. They don't want to be thought of as less than. They don't want people to think of them as being stupid or foolish or bad. So people are so busy trying to protect their self-image that they hide their best stories.
Yeah.
So
Becky, I think, I mean, honestly, if I could sabotage and commandeer what we were originally going to make this podcast about, I think that POV is really worth exploring. So I'm going to still try to weave in the original idea and ask you questions about what exactly do you mean by a point along the path and how best do you see business memoirs get used? But before I do that, I really want to ask you about this. So you believe that the most powerful stories that we can tell are our secrets. Why do you think that way? And are there not major downsides to making our books filled with our secrets?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. When we talk about a secret, a lot of the things, that's why you see all this drama on TV. Those are all secrets. We all want to know. And we all want to know is because we all screw up. So what we're doing is we're saying, I'm not going to tell anybody my secret, but I'm going to watch TV or read this book, and I'm going to find out how somebody else, you know, whose daughter got pregnant or son got HIV, I'm going to find out how they dealt with it. Then I'm going to deal with it in secret, but it's going to be my secret. And we put so much energy into protecting a secret that we really don't need to expend. I'm not sure if that answered the question, but that's what I find.
Yeah, I'm just curious, how often do you get pushback on this from your clients that are like, well, I don't want to share that?
100%.
What you said, all the time?
100%.
Wow. Then how do you typically get them over that?
Oh, we talk about it. We talk about it. You can resolve or figure anything in the world. You can figure out anything in the world if you'll talk about it. If you will sit down and honestly look at it, and let go of all the crap that you're building up in your mind about what's it going to sound like, what are people going to think. If you can let go of all that and you just say, well, what is this really about? What am I afraid of? And it always comes down to looking foolish or being rejected. We're hardwired that way to not be rejected, because in the past, if you got rejected and kicked out of the tribe and left to survive on your own, you died.
Yeah.
Well, that was back when we lived in the jungle. So what if somebody thinks you're foolish or silly? Everybody's got a secret. Everybody's got a secret. I don't care who you are. You've got a secret.
Yeah. I can see why it would be difficult for a lot of people too. If their goal is to build thought leadership, they want to be seen as a thought leader, and you're saying, hey, tell the things that are going to make you look bad.
Yeah. Because you don't get to be a thought leader without making mistakes. And when you make mistakes, those are your secrets. You know, maybe you popped off. Maybe you were sexually inappropriate. Maybe you lied or cheated, or, you know, there's all kinds of ways to the top. And I think all of us do things that we feel embarrassed about. And some of them are more heinous than others, I guess. But everybody has done something that they're ashamed of or embarrassed by. But that's the thing, is since we've all done it, if you come up with it and you say, you know, I did this and this is what I learned, you know, then you'll be shocked to see how many people come forward and say, you know, that happened to me too.
So what results have you seen from pushing your clients to embrace the idea of telling their secrets?
Oh, bestsellers. I've had families who've told secrets and have reunited their family, or, you know, an estranged child came back and was like, well, I'm glad you finally said something. Now, you know, now you seem human to me. You know, a lot of fathers, they want to be invincible. And the minute they break down and say, well, I did this, or I got a girl pregnant, or, you know, I ran off, or I didn't finish school, I just said I did. You know, those kind of things, if you can own up to it, it portrays you as somebody with character. And I think we respect people who can admit they made a mistake, take responsibility for it, and then do what they need to do to set things right.
What about the fear of, or the, you know, just the reality, honestly, that you're exposing your darkest or the worst looking aspects of yourself to the general public.
That's what makes it so attractive. Like, you know, like, that's why all the movies and all the drama and everything, it's, but think about it, you know, if you've had something happen to you and you thought you were the only one, and then you find out somebody else had the same thing happen, maybe you got sick or, you weren't able to keep up in school and you fudged something, and then you find out your best friend did or somebody else did. And then you're like, oh, okay, I'm human. Because when we have a secret, we believe that we're the only one that has that secret. But when you find out we're all human, we're all sinners, as the parlance goes, you know, then you can relax and you can say, okay, so, and this is a critical point. If you tell your secret, you've got to take responsibility for fixing it. You know, you can't just say, well, I did it and I don't care, screw you. You know, you don't do that in the book. You say, well, I did this thing and I felt horrible, and this is what I did to correct it, and this is how my business grew out of that. You know, it's got to be.
Just to push back on it again, just because I like hearing your overcomes to these pushbacks. What about the pushback that you're essentially exposing the areas that could be used to make you look bad, you know, by anybody that, you know, any nefarious person that wants to make you look bad, you've just given them the ammunition, basically.
Yeah, and that's fine. As a reporter, what I found out was the people that got the worst media were the ones that denied doing something. You know, once you, it's out in the open. I mean, once Clinton admitted, you know, that he had had relationships with Lewinsky, people left him alone. That's all they wanted. They wanted to be able to point the finger and say, well, you did it. But, you know, if you go up to somebody and you try to use it against them, what drives that, what gives it the power, is that they're afraid they're going to be exposed. But once they're exposed, so what? It's like, well, I did a TED talk. I did a TED Global talk. And my friends were like, you can't tell the world that you can't go on TED and tell people that you were homeless. Everybody will think of you as that homeless woman for the rest of your life. And I said, I don't care. You know, I was honestly homeless after my father died. And I talked about it. So nobody can use it against me because I own it. I have control of it. So when you own your mistake, when you own your sin or you own your act or whatever it is, then nobody can use it against you. You're in control of it. It's when we give it to other people by trying to hide it that we lose control.
Yeah. Are there any other practical benefits that you can think of to doing this aside from it makes your book more attractive? It makes you more likely to, you know, sell a lot of copies. You also mentioned potentially reuniting family members. What are some other, are there any other practical benefits that you can think of from taking this approach to writing a memoir?
Yeah, it opens the book so that you can write the rest of the book. Most of the people will say, well, I started my book and I can't finish it. And I'll say, oh, I guess you got to about chapter 3. And they're like, yeah, how did you know? Chapter 3 is about how far most of us can get because that's our comfort level. So once you hit that secret, you know, you've hit your comfort level. But once you release it, it frees up all kinds of stuff. So it frees you up psychologically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, if you're into that. But yeah, you just, it's like some big, huge weight is lifted off your shoulders. You're like, I don't have to hide it anymore. It's what I did. It's who I am. And I've taken steps and I'm moving forward. You know, we don't have to keep playing it over and over and wallowing in it and letting people torture us with it. And it's all in how you tell it. And if you can get to where you tell it before somebody else does, then that's, you know, that's all the better.
But it's, you it's said just, it's all in how you tell it. What exactly do you mean by that? Like, what's the way to tell a secret?
Yeah, I wouldn't go into a party and say, well, my daughter's 14 and she's pregnant by my uncle or my brother.
No, sure. But like in the context of a business memoir, is there an art or methodology to the telling of your secrets?
Yeah, it's part of a long string of things. But essentially, you want to tease your reader into it, and then you want to reveal it the same way you would with the movie. Either where you jump into the middle of it, and then you do a little flashback, forward, flashback about it. And right now there's not a whole lot other than pedophilia and child sex trafficking that I can think of that is so horrible that most people won't understand, you know?
Yeah.
People get sexual diseases, their kids get pregnant, they smoke, they do drugs, they have pot, they're in a car accident and run away. I mean, there's not a whole lot new under the sun.
Yeah. And
I think we can almost all of us forgive most of the people, especially if we have friends or we know somebody and they're overall a decent person. I mean, at the end of his life, Steve Jobs finally started admitting things. And I think people who hated him thought a little bit better of him because he had accepted responsibility for some of the stuff he did.
Yeah. Man, it's so interesting how counterintuitive it is. Like you want to be seen as something. That's part of the reason that someone writes a book. It's not always the reason, but it's often the reason. And so then you purposefully say the things that you know are going to, you're going to be bearing your ugliest or just maybe your most embarrassing on purpose. It's just funny how counterintuitive that is.
I know it's kind of silly. And we do it because a lot of people say, oh, I'm in it for the money. Well, they're not in it for the money. They're in it for the power, because we think, you know, like 70% of us have experienced trauma as children, and we think that having power is going to protect us from getting hurt again. And we think that if we can present as, you know, the good girl, the good boy, you know, the whatever, the ideal child, that if we can show the world that we're good, that somehow that's going to protect us from bad things happening to us. And it's not.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
So I want to get practical. Talk me through. So let's say that someone is listening to this. They're either working on their memoir or they are a ghostwriter working on someone else's memoir. What is, like, how practically do you actually get either yourself or someone to tell their secrets in the context of a business memoir? Like, what is step one in the process?
Step one in writing any memoir, business or personal, is to have a theme. You know, what's the theme of your memoir? And you can write, people think they only get one memoir. Well, you can write 100 if you want. A memoir is a book about a lesson, like a coming of age or a lesson or something profound that you learned through experiencing one things or that you experienced growing up, you know, that kind of thing. So what you have to do first to pick a theme. And if your secret is related to the theme, then you tell the secret. If it's not, you don't tell a secret just because it's a secret. You tell a secret because it relates to the theme. It forwards the theme and advances it. That secret has to have a job too.
Got it. I love it. So you pick a theme. Uh-huh. Then the secrets that are related to that theme, you decide to tell them. What's the next step?
Yeah. And then you've got to decide what you want. Well, the job of the memoir, you know, who do you want to reach? Do you want to reach, you know, an audience that's similar? Like I can't think of the name of it, but there's a lot of memoirs about, say, alcoholics. And this one is a mother-son memoir. And they're both alcoholics, but they decide to get sober together. And I can't remember the name, but they book together, like they alternate chapters. So they talk about, you know, when they first got drunk, when they realized they were alcoholics, that kind of thing. But the goal was to reach other people who are struggling with addiction. You know, they're not trying to reach saints or, you know, just curious onlookers. They wanted to reach people who had had addiction issues. So who's your memoir going to read? So to everybody. Well, that's not realistic. You know, it's like going to a basketball game and trying to reach football fans. They might show up at basketball or sports, but you want to reach your audience, and you really got to narrow that audience, and you've got to find out what do they like. You've got to do a little bit of research.
Yeah.
You know, before you start it.
Becky, this is a practical question that I love to ask people whenever they're giving advice, which is, how could someone who's trying to follow what you're saying easily get it wrong?
Oh, they probably will get it wrong. Unless you sit down with a coach, you have a written book. And I'm working on a book now that I'm going to to give out free to people, how to write your memoir. I've actually started a company that I haven't quite launched it. It's called The Mobile Memoirist.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking for a van or an RV, and I'm going to live in that, travel around to campgrounds, nursing homes, anywhere that I can meet people and teach them how to write their memoir.
Oh, this sounds awesome.
I think it's going to be fun, but I'm putting together a book that outlines the process. Because writing your memoir isn't just about writing a book. It's actually therapy. And you'll find lots of experts to talk about how writing is therapy, that if you journal, if you write, even if you never show it to anybody or publish it, that it really changes your perspective on yourself. And I think that's why I like memoirs, because you're dealing with secrets, you're dealing with shame and dark emotions, really painful emotions, and you're writing it down. And I work with a lot of people. They never publish their memoir. We write it, and they write it, and they get it all out. It's kind of like a confessional or going to a therapist, but they just put it on paper, and it's so freeing. It's so freeing. Yeah.
Well, just getting back to the what could people easily get wrong? So it's as you're working on this to help train people on how to write their own memoir, what is one of the ways that you think that someone who's honestly trying to follow your advice would likely get it wrong?
They're going to try to follow their intuition, which is going to be wrong. And they're going to try to second guess or make shortcuts. They're going to try to do things they think sound right, but it's totally counterintuitive. The whole process is very counterintuitive. It's terrifying. It's like somebody taking you to a building saying, okay, step off and you'll learn to fly on the way down. And that's what it is. Writing a memoir is somebody throwing you off a cliff and saying, it's okay. You'll either hit the bottom or you'll learn to fly on the way down.
Okay. So how do they avoid following bad intuition?
By following it. I mean, that's where experience comes from. You make mistakes.
I mean about the practical of actually writing the memoir. Like, how are they going to, and they're trying to follow your advice of like, okay, I've picked a theme. I know my audience. I have written down the secrets that I'm going to tell that directly relate to my theme. And they're trying to follow this advice that you're giving, and they're going to get it wrong, you're saying, because they'll trust their intuition. Is that right? And then how do they avoid that?
They need to get a developmental coach or a writer, someone who understands the process, like me or someone else.
And in what ways do you find yourself often correcting the intuition of your clients?
It's pushing. It's mostly pushing their comfort zone. It's almost always pushing their comfort zone.
Can you give me an example? Not necessarily where you go into details or anything, but like a kind of example, like the kind of way in which their intuition might be off and you have to help correct it.
Yeah, I'm working on a story about an immigrant who came from Iran right around the time of Saddam Hussein. And the story is pretty dark. There's a lot of bad stuff that happens dark. She didn't do anything horrible, but she didn't talk about it. And she said, well, my intuition tells me not to talk about it because it's so dark and it's so depressing that nobody will want to read it. And her intuition very strongly tells her nobody will want to read it because it's so dark. So if she follows her intuition and says it's too dark or it's too graphic or it's too this or that, I know that that's exactly what an audience wants. I know that people 30 to 50 years old have no idea what was happening in Iran. They have no idea about the Royal Guard. They don't know. They want to know. They want to understand. And the only way to help them understand is to tell those secrets and to explore that darkness in a way that they understand, but not to do it just for the graphicness of it, because it's not even graphic. And a lot of it's just, it's emotional. It's very painful emotionally. But and her intuition is saying, no, I don't want to do that.
Got it.
Yeah, so we're having an impact. And that happens with a lot of people. A lot of men, I find out, were molested, say, as children. And they're like, well, I don't think other men, I think men will think less of me hearing that I was molested as a child. And I'm like, you'd be surprised how many men were molested as a child. And they think that they couldn't go on to become leaders because, you know, somebody, you know, that to them. And it really, you know, intuitively they're thinking, no, I'll be seen as not a real man. Well, intuitively, a real man would say, this happened to me and I overcame it, or I did this, or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. So intuitively, it makes sense, they think, to protect themselves, when in actuality, by confronting it and talking about it, it makes them appear stronger.
What would you say to somebody who maybe has a vulnerable story like that, and they're like, well, I'm not trying to write a book where I just look for pity from people?
Yeah, and you don't have to tell it from a pity perspective. I told my story about being homeless, not from a pity perspective, but I'm like, this is what happened, and this is what I did to turn it around. And you really want to focus not on, oh, woe is me, and this was horrible. You can say, you know, it sucked, but, you know, the next 75% of the story is about the steps you took, what you did, how you felt, how you came in. So you want to focus on the outcome, not the event itself. The event just introduces the reader to what happened and to what you did from that point to get out of it.
Yeah. Okay, Becky. So my last big question for you just circles back to the first thing that we were talking about, and that being like writing a memoir, a point along the path. What would you say to somebody who is like, well, there's thousands and thousands of memoirs written. What is the point of just adding another memoir to this sea of memoirs that exists?
Well, look how many people binge watch Netflix. I mean, there's a demand for more stories, more YouTube, more videos, more books. People can't get enough, you know? So what if you're wanting to see, you're trying to reach your audience, and not everybody's going to, you know, want your story, but the ones that do, they really want it. They're looking for it. So, you know, as human beings, we're structured to live and thrive and learn and grow on stories, which is memoir. I mean, the Bible is basically, you know, God's memoir. The Quran
and the people's and the people who encountered him's memoir.
Yeah, it's I tell people this. I said, well, you know, King David was an adulterer, and he murdered his best friend because he was sleeping with his best friend's wife and she got pregnant. I mean, if you go into the Bible, and people are shocked and they're like, you mean King David of the Bible? I'm like, yeah, read your Bible. You know, a lot of secrets in that book. But yeah, so everybody likes stories. That's how we learn. That's how we compare ourselves to the characters. We identify with them. Everything from, you know, the Matrix to the Lord of the Rings, all those things. We identify with other characters and we say, what did they do and how can I do that to make my life better? It's very powerful.
Awesome. Well, Becky, it's been really enjoyable talking to you about this. What's one big takeaway that you would want listeners to get from this episode?
Right. I mean, even if you never publish your memoir, sit down and write your secrets down, and you can burn it right after you write it, but write it, get it out.
What's the value in that?
It gets it on paper. It changes the brain. It changes the brain is neuroplastic. It changes. So when you write it and you commit it to paper, like by hand, or even if you, it changes, it literally physically changes your brain, and you'll notice it. And it makes your life better.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things like, you know, breathing exercises or meditation or prayer, or just the things that everybody says like, oh, this will, you know, this will change the way you think, this will make you happier, this will make you more at peace, et cetera. It's like, it sounds like it's something that you wouldn't have to physically do, but the only way to achieve the benefit of it is to physically do it. I think similarly, when we talk out loud, it does something different than when we just think in our head. And so I could imagine that when you write something on paper, that's another level stronger than talking out loud.
Oh, it really is. It really is. I mean, I took some graphology courses with the FBI when I was in college, and you can actually change habits by changing your handwriting because it rewires things. So writing something down is really powerful. And I tell clients, I say, write it down and then go burn it. Or hold on to it for a few days and reread it. But it literally changes the way you see things just to write it.
Yeah. Well, Becky, I am looking forward to, what is it going to be called? The Mobile Memoirist?
couple memoirs. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Is that going to, are you going to drive up and down the coast?
I'm going to drive up and down the coast and around the country. And I'm thinking I'm going to do kind of like, you know, what you're doing here is just have a podcast and maybe do the 3-minute memoir, you know, and then because I'll have to, you know, edit it, of course, but to ask people about their secrets and then weave it into a short video, you know, show people how it can be done.
I think that's brilliant. Okay. How would you like listeners to connect with you?
Becky at BeckyBlanton.com.
Awesome. Becky, thank you so much for being on.
Well, I appreciate it, Timmy. Thank you.